Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, up here on Signal Hill, where it's 47 degrees and a beautiful day. We're looking for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 52, calm winds, mostly clear skies tonight too, a low around 41 tonight. Those calm winds will turn to the northwest and go to just 5 miles per hour after midnight. And guess what? Sunny skies tomorrow too with a high near 52, northwest about 5, turning back to calm tomorrow morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough begins to nail down next year's budget. The president of the Alaska Senate has a different timeline for addressing Alaska's budget than the governor does. And an update in that flooding in Buckland, if you've seen the pictures. Wow. All that and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. With Roe v. Wade hanging by a thread, the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to consider a major rollback of abortion rights. As NPR's Nina Totenberg reports, it is the second time in weeks that the court's new conservative majority has signaled a willingness to reconsider long-established legal doctrine, this time on abortion and just weeks ago on guns.
The court's 1973 ruling in Roe v. Wade declared that a woman has a constitutional right to terminate a pregnancy in the first 6 months when the fetus is incapable of surviving outside the womb. But on Monday, the court put that ruling starkly in doubt, announcing that it would reconsider whether states may ban abortions prior to fetal viability. The test cases from Mississippi, which bans most abortions after 15 weeks, significantly before fetal viability. The lower courts blocked enforcement of the law, finding it in conflict with Roe v. Wade and subsequent abortion decisions. Now the court may change that. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Israel's unleashed a new wave of airstrikes on the Gaza Strip. A building housing the Hamas-run Religious Affairs Ministry was struck, part of a campaign that Israel says is retaliation for Hamas rocket attacks. International calls for a ceasefire are mounting, but the White House says it believes the U.S., a close ally of Israel, can be most effective in pursuing what it calls quiet, intensive diplomacy. Well, the Biden administration has informed members of Congress of its plans to sell $735 million in weapons to Israel. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports the window for Congress to object to the move is quickly closing.
Two congressional aides confirmed to NPR reporting by the Washington Post that lawmakers were informed of the weapons sales to Israel on May 5th. Congress has 15 days to object through a joint resolution of disapproval, but none has been filed in either chamber with a deadline quickly approaching this week. A spokeswoman for Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee said ranking Texas GOP Representative Michael McCaul supports the plan. The spokeswoman also noted the sale was informally cleared in April before Congress received its official notice on May 5th, triggering the 15-day review process that ends on Thursday. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Washington.
A longtime associate of Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz has pleaded guilty in a Florida courtroom to 6 federal charges that include sex trafficking of a minor. Under a plea deal, Joel Greenberg admits to introducing a minor to other adult men for sex. The former Florida tax collector, who's also accused of embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars, agrees to cooperate with a federal investigation involving Congressman Gaetz. The Florida lawmaker has not been charged with any crimes. A spokesman says Gaetz has never had sex with a minor and has never paid for sex. This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
As the Kodiak Island Borough begins to nail down next year's budget, the debate between education funding and raising property taxes has taken center stage. This year, the Assembly is considering two proposed budgets. The budget prepared by the Borough Manager's Office set a $21 million budget, including $11 million for education support, but no money for nonprofits and Kodiak College. However, that budget comes with a property tax increase. That property tax increase does not sit well with Assembly Member James Turner.
Do I think it should be $11.90? Absolutely. But you're going to have to make some assumptions, because there's no way, in my mind, we should be raising the mill rate.
Turner proposed education support at $10.5 million, restoring contributions to nonprofits and Kodiak College, and making cuts across the board in various borough departments with no increase to the mill rate. While Assembly Member Jeff Smith thought that Turner's education support proposal was too low, he appreciated the nonprofit funding proposal and would consider a mill rate increase to fund them.
I do think we need to look at how are we going to support nonprofits that support our community. They were the backbone of this community for the last year when things were going on in our community and people were in need.
Assembly Member Amy Williams also argued for fully funding the school district.
I think if there's any year to fully fund the school, it is this year, because this year is the one we have to recover from what happened from COVID.
The Assembly debated if there might be more COVID relief that could replace lost revenue from last year's severance tax, also known as the fish tax, which is collected from Kodiak fisheries because production was low due to COVID. Plus, there's a possibility that some debt relief could come from that from the state. But some, like Assemblymember Scott Arndt, thought that they would not be able to count on that money.
With these cuts, we're making some assumptions here. We're making an assumption that we're only going to get 50% reimbursement on school debt. And so I can't say we're going to fund the schools at their request right now. We got too many unknowns. That's not prudent right now.
The Assembly must approve education funding at the May 20th regular meeting. The property tax rate must be approved by June 15th. The President of the Alaska Senate is laying out a different timeline for trying to solve Alaska's long-term budget problem than Governor Mike Dunleavy. Senate President Peter Michicki welcomed Dunleavy's call for a special session in August to address the state's long-term budget problem. But Michicki, a Soldotna Republican, said on Friday that lawmakers are working to finish their work on the budget by the end of the regular session. And he questioned whether this month is the right time to consider changes to the Alaska Permanent Fund without other large budget changes. Dunleavy issued the first of two special session calls for Thursday to finish the budget and to pass a constitutional amendment regarding the Permanent Fund. Michicki says it may be more appropriate for the legislature to consider Permanent Fund dividends along with other issues in August.
We have to take the PFD issue off the table, and whatever that solution is has to be funded, right? We've talked about that. But people have been here for 121 days by then, and those are big items.
House Speaker Louise Stutes has praised Dunleavy for engaging with legislators on major long-term issues, but she agrees with Michicki that it would be difficult to pass the governor's plan for dividends before considering other legislation. The plan would devote 50% of the annual draw from the permanent fund for dividends.
Well, personally, now, we haven't really had this great big conversation in our caucus, but how can you put a 50% PFD out there with no way to pay for it?
The session is scheduled to end on Wednesday. The first special session would begin on Thursday. After an ice dam on the river below Buckland caused flooding on Wednesday, the village is seeing the water recede and thinking about future plans to prevent this degree of flooding in years to come. KOTZ's Nicole Edmondson reports.
As the water crested around noon on Thursday, but has been steadily receding. Ballot anticipates some damage to water and sewer systems, along with roads that will need repairs.
We had one house we had to tie down. We're still on boiling water notice, and we will be until our water people say it's good to go.
The state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says water and electric systems are functioning normally in the village. The airstrip is dry and functional, but because the road is still covered by water, it is only accessible by boat. In conjunction with local authorities, Ballot says there were several residents using their boats to support the effort.
The cops were VPOs. They were all running around in cahoots trying to make sure everything's okay.
Northwest Arctic Borough Mayor Lucy Nelson says the water crested about 12 feet above normal. Ballot attributes the ice dam to warmer winter temperatures that result in thinner river ice.
When the ice is too thin, it's just like a knife cutting through the ground. It starts to fall down. So we're going to have to work with FEMA to try to find some erosion control funds to repair and make sure we stop that damage.
Nelson said that despite the residents of Buckland being safe and the water receding, the disaster is far from over.
They did declare a disaster and submitted that to the borough, and we provided assistance in the amount of $10,000 to help with any of the immediate needs that they have.
Ballot, with the native village of Buckland, found a silver lining in the situation, pointing out a lesson to be learned.
I think, you know, our kids are watching this and our youth are watching this, and they know the benefits of working together, no matter who you are.
Ballot said that he was really appreciative of all of the support the community has received from around the state.
We had a good meeting the other day with the different agencies, with the borough, and I was surprised that the number of people that called from the state, the number of people that called from the state, were very pleased with the borough's response. Making sure we connect with the people and the funders that are going to be hopefully helping us after we find out what happened over here.
Mayor Nelson says there will be another meeting today to assess the short and long-term needs of the community. Buckland remains under a flood advisory warning from the National Weather Service through Saturday morning. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Nicole Edmison.
Alaska will join at least 12 other states in opting out of extra federal benefits for unemployed workers, citing workforce shortages. The withdrawal will end a $300 weekly payment that was added under the federal pandemic unemployment compensation program passed by Congress last year. It's paid in addition to regular state unemployment insurance benefits. KTOO's Raja McChesney has this story.
Alaska has seen a surge in new jobs in the last few months, and state officials say they're trying to fill them with at least some of the 36,000 people who are getting unemployment benefits in the state. To do that, the Dunleavy administration is joining several other Republican-led states in opting out of a federally funded program that pays an extra $300 a week to Alaskans who are out of work. They argue that the extra money is discouraging people from taking jobs. Department of Labor Commissioner Tamika Ledbetter said during a Friday press conference that labor officials decided to cut off that extra aid after talking to employers and the business community.
It is time for Alaskans who are able and available to go to work to do so.
But economists and policymakers are pushing back on that. They say that this is a complex problem that doesn't have a simple fix. First, a quick look at the data. There is always a surge in available jobs this time of year. Sometimes employers fill them with Alaskans. Other times, as is the case in the tourism industry in Southeast, communities are inundated with out-of-town workers for the season. A new report from the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation shows that, as of Tuesday, there are more than 19,000 jobs available in the state. At the top of that list, registered nurses. The state is looking for them at something like 1.5 times the national average, and there are at least 600 unfilled positions. But there's also demand for retail sales, stockers, maintenance and repair people, and fast food workers. Anchorage economist Musin Gatabi says it's not surprising to see that kind of a spike. It's great news that it happened at all. There wasn't much of a bump in job numbers last year as the state locked down during the COVID-19 pandemic. But Gatabi also says that trying to force people to take those jobs by cutting their benefits may not be the best tool for the job.
Cutting unemployment insurance is a fairly blunt instrument that tries to essentially make paid less generous than work.
There are other ways to get people to return to work. In an ideal world, Ghatabi says policymakers could make work more attractive.
You could potentially keep unemployment insurance as is and then provide some return to work bonus.
In Montana, which also opted to cut off those extra federal payments, policymakers have added a return to work benefit. Alaska labor officials said Friday that they aren't planning on offering anything like that. Ghatabi and other state economists say that while there are some people who are making enough in unemployment benefits to completely cover income from the jobs they lost, that is not the whole problem. Still, Ghatabi says employers could also sweeten the deal, bumping up wages so that workers could earn more than they're currently making on unemployment.
And that way, you could potentially get the people that were staying home because unemployment insurance was more attractive back to work, but you would also accommodate the people that are staying home for different reasons.
Employers in other parts of the country are offering cash bonuses, sometimes in the thousands of dollars, to incentivize people to come to work. Other places are offering money if you show up for a job interview or expanding benefits. Even with those perks, there are other factors keeping people out of the labor market in Alaska. Ledbetter acknowledged that when she announced she was cutting the program.
For those Alaskans still burdened by lack of childcare or transportation or other issues, I understand the challenges. This period has been like no other in our history. However, unemployment insurance is a temporary support system.
Several lawmakers said Friday that this is not the right time to cut benefits and pointed to data showing that increased unemployment benefits led to increased consumer spending during the pandemic. Those extra federal payments will end in Alaska on June 12th. An extension of regular unemployment benefits will continue until September when the federal program expires. From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Federal authorities have seized more than $1 million in pandemic relief money they say an Anchorage hotelier received by lying on applications for the funds. Bob Gross is co-owner of the Inlet Tower Hotel and Suites, a prominent 15-story building at the southwest corner of downtown Anchorage. According to an FBI agent's affidavit filed in court last month, Gross filed fraudulent applications for two types of Federal CARES Act relief money, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, and the Payroll Protection Program. The affidavit says two companies Gross controls received a total of more than $1 million in fraudulently obtained funds. Gross has not been charged with a crime in the case, but the move to seize the money indicates he's the target of a continuing investigation. Gross did not respond to an emailed request for comment or calls to his office at Inland Tower, and federal prosecutors also would not comment on the case. The Anchorage Assembly voted 8-1 to immediately end the city's mask mandate at a special session Friday afternoon. The move follows new guidance released Thursday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that state that vaccinated Americans don't need to mask in most indoor settings if they are vaccinated. Assemblymember Meg Zelatel was the only no vote on the motion. Earlier in the day, Acting Mayor Austin Quinn Davidson announced the mask mandate would end next week, but the Assembly's action supersedes that move. Private businesses or organizations like the Anchorage School District still may require masks, and a federal mask mandate requires masking on planes, trains, and buses. The CDC still recommends Americans wear masks while in medical facilities and congregate settings like homeless shelters. Anchorage moved from a high alert status to an intermediate alert status based on per capita COVID case rates for the first time since July 2020, according to a news release from the mayor's office. About 53% of Anchorage residents 16 or older are fully vaccinated, according to health department data.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. No changes have been made for Alaska trade and export data, which don't even mention seafood. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Seafood industry stakeholders were asked 1 year ago for input on ways to improve U.S. trade practices. The comments were invited by a new task force named by the Trump administration to resolve barriers to U.S. seafood trade and support more fair market access. A good start would be including seafood on the official state sheets used by the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. For Alaska, the word seafood is not even mentioned, although it's been the state's top export by far for decades. But the trade sheet incorrectly claims that oil and coal are Alaska's top exports. It also states that Alaska exports supported an estimated 37,000 jobs. Wrong again. Alaska's seafood industry alone is the state's top private employer, directly supporting nearly 60,000 jobs and 10,000 secondary jobs. Seafood processing is Alaska's largest manufacturing base, but under a category called Made in America Manufacturing Exports from Alaska and Jobs, the trade data states that top manufacturing exports are transportation equipment, food and kindred products, computer and electronic products, and machinery. Who knew? It says agriculture in Alaska depends on exports and claims that Alaska is the country's 50th largest agricultural exporting state, topping the list of goods, other plant products, followed by livestock and feeds and grains. Seafood also is not mentioned in the U.S. trade pages for other big producers. For example, according to the Federal Trade Office, Hawaii's largest exports also are oil and coal, although it has no reserves of either. Questions to trade reps about correcting the data have gone unanswered. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 17th day of May, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:42. It won't set again until 10:32, giving us 16 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 77, set in 2014, and our record low was 28, set in 1966. And currently 59, almost 50 degrees, 49 degrees. Sunny skies out there, looking for a high near 52. Mostly clear skies tonight as well, with a low around 41. And sunny skies tomorrow as well, with a high near 52 tomorrow too. Increasing clouds on Tuesday night, and rain is likely on Wednesday. So today and tomorrow are the days. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up on the east side any minute now, 12:29 p.m. That will be a 0.1 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:16 p.m. of 5.7 feet. Our low tide about midnight will be at 12:11 a.m. and be 3.7 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will happen at 6:15 a.m. and be 7.5 feet. Over on the west side, these are organic pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 12:52 p.m. That will be a 1 foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 7:32 p.m. of 11 feet. Your low tide for after midnight will be at 1:09 a.m. and be 5.5 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 6:47 a.m. and be 11.7 feet. Mariners, here's your weather synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A high pressure will persist across the western Gulf through Tuesday evening, and a front will approach the western Gulf on Tuesday night. Marmot Island is Sitkin at Kodiak's east side offshore, southwest 15 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof on our west side, southwest 20 right now, seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. For Chiniak Bay, variable wind less than 10 right now and seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, Variable less than 10 right now, becoming west 10 this afternoon, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, west wind 15 knots, becoming southwest 10 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet. Let's take a quick look at our local announcements. There is a Board of Education regular meeting tonight. That is beginning at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's F-140 in the Old School Wing. Meeting agenda and packet can be viewed at Board Docs at the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. The Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting Tuesday, May 18th at 12 p.m. That's happening in the Kodiak Fisherman's Hall, and the meeting is open to the public. Again, that's tomorrow at noon, Fisherman's Hall, Ports and Harbor. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the meeting link and agenda packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. To request more information or paper copies, call the Harbor Department at 486-8080. The KMXT Board of Directors will be holding their next month regular monthly meeting tomorrow as well. That's happening 6 p.m. via Zoom. If you would like to sit in on the meeting, please call the station here at 486-3181, or you can send an email requesting a link to gm@kmxt.org. AMC and Alaska Sea Grant are conducting a fishing vessel drill conductor class in Kodiak starting next Thursday and Friday. For Thursday, it's going to be 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Friday it will be 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island. There is a cost for the class, but it's certainly well worth it, as it meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. You can register online at www.amsea.org, or give them a call at 747-3287. The Kodiak Arts Council and the Frame Shop invite Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st Annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak artists completed within the past 3 years. Eligible media include, but are not limited to, drawing, painting, photography, mixed media, pastels, metalwork, jewelry design, fiber and textile art, and woodwork. The art show will be staged in person downtown in the Fisherman's Hall, right next door to the fun of the festival. The deadline to register is May 21st. It's coming right up, as is the 17th today. Complete guidelines and a link to the online submission form can be found at kodiakarts.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.